Welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim.
And I'm Esti Chandler. As the summer of 2014 began, things were already heating up between Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Hamas, not in Gaza, but in the West Bank. On Nakba Day, May 15th, 2014, two unarmed Palestinian teenagers walking home from a Nakba demonstration were shot and killed by Israeli soldiers near the Israeli Ofer prison outside the town of Betuna. And their shooting was caught by a security camera at a local store, which was later confiscated from the shopkeeper by the Israeli military. A few weeks later, on the evening of June 12th, three Israeli teenagers were picked up hitchhiking, but not by a fellow settler, as they assumed, instead by two rogue Hamas cell members who decided to stage a kidnapping in the West Bank. Both kidnappers had lost family members in the armed struggle against the occupation and were reportedly prepared to kill and die to achieve their desperate goals. Hours after they were picked up, the boys were pronounced missing. And as Max Blumenthal writes in his book, The 51-Day War, quote, "In callous acts of bloodletting and cynical deception that followed, the stage was set for the 51-Day War," end quote, which began on July 8th, 2014, in the first weeks of Negwa and I being handed the microphone of Middle East in Focus by the legendary Don Bustani.
So, ST, I can't believe it's been 10 years. So crazy. 10 years have already gone by of us co-hosting and co-producing the show. It has been such a privilege and honor to have been mentored by Don, who was not only an incredible radio host and producer, but such a beautiful soul, who led with such kindness, gentleness, love. I'm actually about to get emotional, while being fiercely committed to the truth and justice and always leading with such integrity. It's also been, sorry, I'm like totally getting emotional. I didn't expect this.
I had predicted that you would not make it through this hour without shedding a tear.
It's been such a privilege and honor to actually co-host and produce with you, ST. I really couldn't have asked for a better partner. I've learned so much from you, and I have been continuously inspired by you over the years, and I know so many others. Your commitment and passion for social justice is felt through and through, not just in the airwaves, but how you live each day. And I'm so grateful for all of you, the listeners, for all the guests we've had over the years, and for all the amazing people working and volunteering at KPFK, including Gary Bach, our sound engineer, and Chuck, who comes on after us. You know, all of you that have given your heart and soul to making sure that we have a space on the airways 24 hours a day where the truth can be shared, discussed, and honored unapologetically with love and a commitment to helping create a world truly rooted in justice and peace. Here's to another 10 years and beyond, hopefully. And I just, again,
Inshallah.
And I want to thank everyone out there. And I want to thank you, Don Bustani, for creating the foundation and creating a beautiful legacy that has made Middle East in Focus possible.
Ditto to everything you said. I certainly could not be sitting here without you. So we start today's show with a couple of guests who knew and worked with our beloved predecessor, Don Bustani. Reverend Daryl Myers served for 45 years as pastor of 8 Presbyterian congregations in Southern California, as well as being campus pastor at Cal State Fullerton, Fullerton College, and Rio Hondo College. In 1969, Rev Myers founded and chaired the Middle East Fellowship of Southern California, and over 30 years represented the fellowship at numerous United Nations-related national and international conferences on the question of Palestine. He is a founding member of Friends of Sabeel, the Israel-Palestine Mission Network of the Presbyterian Church, and is a current member of Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. Importantly, when our paths crossed nearly 14 years ago, he was with one of his very best friends, who would become a mentor to Negwa and I, the late, great Don Bustani. It is truly a pleasure to welcome Reverend Daryl Myers back to Middle East in Focus.
Well, thank you. I'm very honored and pleased and happy to be back. Thank you very much.
We appreciate you so much being part of this celebration of our 10 years and memorial to Don. Rev D, can you tell us a bit about your friend, the man, Don Bustani, his commitment to the community, his work with organizations like the ADC, and perhaps how he felt about KPFK and Middle East in Focus, which he hosted and produced before Negwa and I for 17 years.
Well, that's amazing, isn't it? You know, I knew Don from, I guess, around the 70s or so. Don was always very supportive, especially of the Arab American community, especially in Los Angeles and Orange counties, and engaged in various movements and organizations, serving and helping to elevate the voice of Arab Americans, especially when it was not at all popular to do so, and sometimes very risky. As our mutual friend Alex O'Day found out in his office in Orange County, at which I was the night before seeing him. Anyway, he's especially, Don Bustani was especially promoting the Palestinian voice and the story, including the right of return. And he did sometimes speak at our Middle East Fellowship meetings as well, and had numerous speaking engagements and at rallies and debates, and was involved also with the organizations that are so have been so prominent in this area, especially being four times the president of the LA chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. And Don also was a founding member and a past chair of what was called the Cousins Club of Los Angeles and Orange Counties that brought together Arabs and Jews in conversation to try to find a more peaceable future. He was a true community leader. Not only that, he was co-president of the Media Image Coalition of LA's County Commission on Human Relations, in which they dealt with the depiction of how minorities are featured in films and TV. And one notable time of his was speaking out against the Disney film Aladdin and how they portrayed the Arab peoples in that film. So Don did so much, a true community leader. And so central, however, to his legacy was his work as the voice of KPFK's Middle East in Focus. I had been listening to that for years before. And Sarah Jacobus was on, and of course, Judith Gabriel for years, and did such a wonderful job. And for almost two decades, 1996 to 2014, the stimulating, friendly voice and host of Middle East in Focus, Middle East in Focus, Don possessed such qualities that I would term as AIP, articulate, informational, personable. Mm-hmm. I remember recently a longtime mutual friend and community activist and fellow debater, Vicky Tamouche, remarked that Don's legacy was elevating the quality and bringing professionalism to Middle East in Focus. And to that, I'm a regular listener and a fan, as I say. I would say amen. I just want to add one other thing. About a quarter of a century ago, a local screenwriter and teacher wrote in a periodical these words about Don, that Don voices that speak out about the injustices perpetrated by the Israelis upon the Palestinians are almost never heard in our mainstream media. The Israeli establishment doesn't want Americans to know what's really going on over there. What I want on the program is to present the truth. In Arab-Israeli issues, the bias of the mainstream media has almost exclusively favored the Israeli side, and that is not the truth. He goes on, while the program is of great interest to Arab Americans, it really addresses Jews and other mainstream Americans, because that's where the major leverage will come from to influence decisions made in Washington, D.C. So much about him, and I just personally knew him as such a warm and caring person, interesting, was at his home many times, number of lunches and dinners. We met almost monthly those months before he finally had his last days in Santa Barbara. And I will always be very appreciative of Don personally, because I was asked, and it was my deep honor to be asked, to officiate at his longtime, four decades old wife's memorial service, Judy Gabriel, who was a story in herself in working for Palestinian human rights. And I was also honored to be asked by Don twice to host Middle East in Fellowship, Middle East in Focus, I'm sorry, when Don could not be there. And one occasion I was interviewing the late Mark Ellis, who died this past week or so, was the voice of Jewish liberation. So these are just some of my memories of Don, and we have missed and lost a tremendous human being and a real voice for justice and peace.
Reverend Myers, this is Negwa. If you could just stay on with us. We're going to bring in Guy Aoki as well into the conversation, but if you could just stick around with us for this conversation. Okay.
I'd be pleased to.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Thank you. Guy Aoki was a researcher and mixing producer for Casey Kasem's American Top 40, pop music critic, and a Los Angeles Times reporter. For 17 years, he wrote syndicated pop music radio shows for Dick Clark Productions, including the U.S. Music Survey. A fourth-generation Japanese-American from 1992 to 2017, he wrote the Rafu Shimpo's Into the Next Stage, the longest-running column focusing on Asian Americans in the media. He is also the founding president of Media Action Network for Asian American, the first Asian American watchdog organization, which he co-founded in 1992. Guy Aoki, welcome to Middle East in Focus. We're so happy you can join us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Guy, you originally met Don when he was producing American Top 40, and eventually you were offered a job as a researcher for the show. Can you talk about that experience, about working with Don, and what impressed you about him, and if your experience working with him affected your career?
Oh, absolutely. I grew up in Hilo, Hawaii, and in the seventh grade, from January 1975, I started sitting down and listening to American Top 40 3 hours every Saturday night. I write down every song from number 40 to number one, how much a song went up or down the chart, where it peaked, and any kind of tribute that Casey Kasem would offer. And so in the summer of 1983, I was in Hawaii, back in Hawaii, and I wrote a trivia question with an answer of a category no one had ever heard of. It was, who holds the record for being the lead singer of the most groups that made the top 40? And I found this guy no one knew about who sang with five different groups. So they ran it in 1983, December. I wrote a thank you note. They ran it, gave me full credit. They played excerpts of every single song. It was a very long piece. And I wrote a thank you note in March of 84. And as a PS, I said, I'm looking for a summer job. Do you need a statistician or something? If you do, please send me an application form. Well, Don Bastani tracked me down in my dorm at Occidental College. And he said, we thought you're still in Hawaii. He goes, you're in L.A. now. He said, well, we're so impressed with what you know about pop music. You can come work for us. Usually we have an interview segment, but we can forego that. You can start tomorrow if you want. So it was this fairy tale thing. So I was a production assistant for a year. And then he let me go after a year because he didn't keep them around for very long. And then 17 days later, he hires me back to be a researcher on anybody who ever made the top 40. And then the following year, in 86, he asked me to be a mixing producer. We would add Casey Kasem's corrected voice track, go into the studio with an engineer, and we'd add the records in. And I would decide, do we play the single version? Do we play the album version? How much of it do we play, given that we have to come under time for each hour? And they had two writers. They would send their drafts to me. I'd retype it. I'd give it back to Don. Don would make corrections, give it back to me to put on cards for Casey to read. And from that, I learned how to write radio shows. And this led to me getting a job writing for Dick Clark. You know, for 17 years, I wrote this adult contemporary countdown show. And Don was such a meticulous person. You know, he would always have Casey redoing lines in the studio to the point where Casey would get sometimes get so upset he would leave the studio for 20 minutes. He'd walk out in a huff, you know. But, you know, so there was a, you know, so there's a thin line about being a little too meticulous and driving people nuts. But I think it was because of Don's careful watch over the show that to this day you have so many Facebook pages dedicated to American Top 40, and people still listen to the full three-hour, four-hour broadcast from 1971, 1988, 1982, because it lasted for the ages. I mean, none of us knew this stuff would be listened to decades later, and it holds up. People love Casey, and they don't realize, unfortunately, as the original writer and producer and director, how much that was really Don's baby.
Yeah, I love what you said, Guy, about how, you know, Don really does, he gives his heart and soul to whatever he's involved in. And, you know, that was very much the case with Middle East in Focus. And even as he handed off the show to ST and I, you know, was so generous with his time, with his guidance, with his advice, and that he really creates things that stand the test of time because of that passion, commitment, heart, and soul. And actually what you also said, Reverend Myers, about how he really does it in a way that's so personable, so authentic, and just so loving and quite frankly, non-judgmental. I mean, he has hard conversations, but does it in a way that he really creates a welcoming space to have these kinds of sometimes difficult conversations. So, you know, and again, I think that's some of the things that's at the heart of Middle East in Focus and what we're really trying to continue to carry on with through his mentorship, guidance, and legacy. I wanted to ask both of you, and actually, Reverend Myers, if I could just quickly turn it back to you. Is there something you can share with us that you feel a lot of people don't know about Don? And then, Guy, if you could also answer that same question. But we'll start first with you, Reverend Myers.
I think we might have lost.
Oh, no.
That's okay, Guy. We can turn it back to you. Is there something you feel you can share with all of us, ST and I, including the listeners, about something people might not know about Don?
Sure. You know, just as Don was the behind-the-scenes guy at American Top 40, he also functioned in the same capacity with Casey in public. You know, I was part of a redress group. We were trying to get an apology from the government for putting 120,000 Japanese-Americans in internment camps during World War II. And my group bugged me to get Casey to speak. They wanted him to be the keynote speaker in February of 1992 when the first Gulf War had just started. And I was talking to Don. He goes, oh, tell Casey I'll help him write the draft. I'll make it easy for him. So Don was always there to be supportive because, you know, Casey, you know, he had split with his first wife. And so the weekend was very important to him. He wanted to spend time with his kids. He only got to see the kids on the weekends. So Don was really the guy who helped these things happen on a public level. So, you know, both Don and Casey came, and Casey gave a great speech that united Arab Americans and Japanese Americans. He said, you know, they're not talking about rounding us up anymore, and I think it's because of what you guys did in getting this bill passed in 1988 And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for all people of color. It was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And there were two other protests that we had. You know, we protested the movie Rising Sun in 1993. Mm-hmm. It was this kind of a divisive movie about Japan taking over the United States with Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes. Mm-hmm. He and Don spoke at my press conference. He and Don marched at the protest in Westwood. 1995, there were some disc jockeys. Whenever there were Asian Americans in the news, they would always imitate them in skits with fake Asian accents. So Don was there on the picket line. Casey was holding up cue cards for Casey to read when the reporters talked to him. You know, all of that is off camera. But this is all that Don did to help the movement, to help bring sensitivity to people of color. And, you know, he just doesn't get enough credit. And he's just a dear, dear man. I owe my whole career to him. I don't know what my life would have been if Don hadn't tracked me down in my dorm and said, you can start tomorrow.
Yeah. And I think the same for ST and I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today and telling us stories about Don. It means so much to us, Guy. We appreciate it very much.
Oh, thank you. He needs to be remembered.
Yes, and we will continue to do that forever. Yeah. As Negwa was saying, each of us got a phone call from Don inviting us to lunch one day. And that was the lunch where he introduced us together and said that I think that you two women are the future of the show.
Yeah.
And we were both thinking about it, but not sure we could really fit a weekly show into our lives. But somehow Don just said, when can you come in and do a show? And I started on one week, and Negwa started on another week, and there we were just doing the show.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, you know, I didn't have ambitions at all to be a radio host. And I think that, you know, I'm so grateful to Don for maybe also seeing something that we didn't necessarily see. And for giving us the opportunity, because I have to say that it has been one of the most extraordinary things in my life to be able to, you know, have this opportunity on KPFK and to share that opportunity with you. And really, I think to learn so much. I mean, one of the things that I think is absolutely incredible about co-hosting and co-producing Middle East in Focus is just how, I mean, as selfish as this might sound, how much I get to learn. You know, I feel so blessed to be able to be a student and to be able to be a student doing this show and learning every show we get to do. I mean, I learned so much about the world.
I agree so much. And you know from my email, sometimes Negwa books a guest and I literally write her and say, oh, I can't wait to hear this conversation. I'm so excited. And you know, the other thing that I think Don helped instill in us was this great, you know, respect for KPFK, for the show, how much it meant to people. He was such a good mentor to us. Literally for 18 months, he sent us notes on the show, sometimes complimentary, sometimes stuff we needed to hear.
And with so much love, he would do it.
So
no judgment,
love.
Just guidance and love. Like, maybe don't do this.
You know? And we felt the love, and we always took his advice.
Yeah.
And, you know, are both so proud, feel so lucky that he, like, I think this arranged marriage is one of the more successful ones I know of. And, you know, instilling in us the importance of KPFK and what it means to the community. We are in Fundrise again now, and, you know, we're having a milestone 10th anniversary. Pacifica is having their 75th anniversary right now, and, you know, the time seems so similar now to the time when the network was founded, and for the same reasons, because of, you know, what mainstream media and corporate media, the influence it was having, and that there were people who didn't feel that the truth was being told. So, you know, we want to be here for 10 more years. We want to make sure that our shows are, you know, able, that all the shows are able to keep going, and that the station has the funding it needs during these very, very tumultuous times to get us through and to have a place where we as community members can get the information we seek. So folks can help us out right now by calling 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Hit option 2 when you call, and your call will be picked up.
And actually, we do still have Guy and Reverend Myers on the line. Reverend Myers, I wanted to bring you back on. Are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Yeah, Reverend Myers, I just wanted to ask you one thing about Dawn. Can you share a little bit with respect to Dawn, something that the listeners might not know about? And, you know, also something about maybe KPFK. I know you've been a part of the KPFK family and community for a long time, and especially considering we're in Fund Drive. Something even, too, about KPFK and Dawn that I think folks don't know about.
Well, he was always very involved in the issues and always open and willing to speak. And he was just such an elegant, without being trying to be over impressive, kind of a person. I know he cared very much for his wife, Judy, with whom he lived for four decades. And he just was so supportive of what she did in her activism. For example, she would go over and work with the Christian Peacemaker teams in Hebron, and he was supportive of her doing that. And I remember being with her one time where they were helping this woman up a ladder just to get to her home because the downstairs was taken over by settlers. Judy was amazing, and Dawn always was very supportive of what she was doing. And so there's a side to that home life, which I think, you know, most of us don't get to see. But it was my pleasure at times to see the deep love between them and the deep honor he gave to her.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank you for sharing that. And again, I want to remind all the listeners that we are in Fund Drive, that, you know, Middle East in Focus has been in the air for all these years, in part because of the incredible commitment and love that Dawn Bustani gave to the show and even gave to us to help carry on the show. Again, I grew up listening to KPFK, I mean, since I was little. So to then be asked to join the team to co-host and co-produce, it was really quite exciting. I felt the little kid in me, like a dream come true for the little kid in me. So, you know, to me, it's kind of incredible that KPFK is still around. I mean, I've talked about this in previous Fund Drives. I don't know that people really realize that how difficult it is to keep a station, to keep a radio station going 24 hours a day that is completely community funded, and doing that to really ensure that we're able to dialogue and discuss the truth, like I said in my intro, unapologetically without any censorship. And, you know, it's not easy to do that 24 hours a day. And the only reason we can do that and do that with integrity is because of all of you, the listeners, because you support it and because you are the reason why we continue to exist, and why we can continue to have the resources to keep going. So please make sure, if you appreciate what we're putting out and you appreciate the community and the dialogue and discussions we're bringing to the airways 24 hours a day, please make sure you call 818-985-5735 to give your donations and support. Again, we really don't exist without you. So just as it's been an amazing 10 years working with ST, it's been an amazing 10 years really getting this opportunity to work with all of you, the listeners.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Another fun part for me, quite frankly, is sometimes getting notes from Negwa's parents, who are also listeners. I didn't have the childhood experience that you had of listening to KPFK in your house. It was such a part of your family life. And so it was always very interesting to get notes from her very, very sweet parents. It made me feel so good. I can honestly say I don't think my parents have ever listened to the show.
Yeah, yeah. You do have a fan club, ST, not just amongst my family, but friends, the community. I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot of folks out there that are very appreciative, and like I've said this in the beginning, not just for what you bring to the airways, but your true commitment to social justice through and through and just your day-to-day.
Well, before I started doing it, for about a decade before you were doing it, because when I'm out in the community and somebody learns that I'm Negwa Ibrahim's partner on Middle East in Focus, their faces light up. You really forged a path ahead of me, and I, you know, kind of picked up the baton from you timing-wise. And so there's tremendous appreciation and love for you in the community that just, you know, swells my heart when I hear it from people, and it happens all the time.
Oh, well, thank you. And again, we just, you know, we are in Fund Drive, so you're going to hear us doing this throughout today's show. Just want to remind everyone that as ST and I are having this love fest, that we feel the love from all of you. And please, again, make sure whatever you can give, it doesn't matter how small it is, whatever you can give, please make sure to call 818-985-5735. Any support is much appreciated and always needed, so we can keep going and keep bringing you all the programming that hopefully you all want us to keep doing.
Yeah, this is, you know, KPFK is a community project, and everybody has a role to play here, including us. And there's, you know, volunteer opportunities. You know, we want as many people who want to be involved in the station to get involved in the station. So the number is 818-985-5735, and press option number 2 when you get there, and help us keep going for another 10 years.
And this is something Dawn actually taught us to do, so I'm going to make sure to do it. It's always to remind everyone that you are listening to Middle East in Focus. And we are talking today about our 10 years on the air as T and I, as co-hosts and co-producers. It's our 10-year anniversary. And we have been talking with Reverend Daryl Myers, who served for 45 years as pastor of 8 Presbyterian congregations in SoCal, as well as being campus pastor at Cal State Fullerton, Fullerton College, Rio Hondo College, and he is also the founding member of Friends of Sabeel, the Israel-Palestine Mission Network of the Presbyterian Church, and is a current member of Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. And we were also talking with Guy Aoki, who was a researcher and mixing producer for Casey Kasem's American Top 40, a pop music critic and a Los Angeles Times reporter. And we've been talking with both of them about Dawn, and they've been sharing wonderful stories about how much he's impacted them and about his incredible, beautiful legacy just as an activist, as someone who's been committed to human rights, and as a radio host and producer, including that radio host and producer on Middle East in Focus. We're now going to switch over to our next guest, Dr. Leila El-Mariati. Before I get there, I just want to do a brief update on the situation in Gaza. The Israeli Defense Forces on Friday yet again shelled tents of displaced Palestinians near the city of Rafah in the Gaza Strip, killing at least 25 and wounding another 50, local health and emergency officials said. Now, Friday's deadly attacks come 2 days after a United Nations-backed commission concluded Israel's, quote, deliberate use of heavy weapons in Gaza constitutes an intentional and direct attack on the civilian population, end quote. Now, meanwhile, the humanitarian situation continues to deteriorate as a result of the Israeli blockade on the territory, which has brought Gaza to the verge of famine. The medical relief group Doctors Without Borders said on Friday that it may have to suspend its operations in Gaza because of dwindling healthcare supplies. It explicitly blamed Israel for the situation, including its seizure and closure of the Rafah crossing last month. The gateway between Gaza and Egypt served as a major artery for the entry of humanitarian assistance and aid workers. Doctors Without Borders said, quote, the closure of the Rafah crossing following Israel's offensive in the south of Gaza in early May, coupled with the endless red tape imposed by Israeli authorities, has led to a dramatically slow flow of humanitarian aid through the crossing that is open, Kerem Shalom entry point. This has led to massive queues of trucks and perilous delays in the delivery of humanitarian assistance across Gaza, end quote. According to the official death toll, Israel's genocidal assault has to date killed at least 37,430 Palestinians. But quite frankly, the true death toll is likely far higher, as thousands more Palestinians are missing and presumed to be dead under the rubble of buildings bombed by Israel. The count also doesn't include those who have died for reasons like starvation or illness outside of health facilities in the region. So with us today to discuss the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Gaza is our guest, Dr. Leila El-Mariadi, who is currently the chair of Kinder USA, a humanitarian organization that has been providing assistance to Palestinian children and their families in Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon for over 20 years. She's an assistant professor of obstetrics. I can never say that word, in gynecology at the Keck School of Medicine. She's been an activist in the Muslim American community for many years, focusing mainly on issues pertaining to the rights of women. Her father's family is from Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip. Welcome, Dr. El-Mariadi, to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you both. Great to be here.
Well, it's lovely to have you here. You have been such a good friend to the show and such an important community member as we talk about the community. Leila, can you start by providing us an update on the work that Kinder USA is doing on the ground in Gaza and an update on the situation in Gaza from the perspective of those on the ground who work with Kinder USA to provide humanitarian relief under these horrific conditions?
It's almost indescribable, and Negwa just went through the summary of what the situation is in general in terms of the numbers. And we knew immediately, having done this work in similar attacks over the last 20 years, knew that we had to pivot to providing emergent humanitarian assistance from day one, because we knew when considering past assaults, that the ratio in terms of the death toll would be at a minimum of 20 Palestinians for every Israeli killed. So that prediction originally was 24,000, and of course we've exceeded that number with the decimation of all civil infrastructure throughout the Gaza Strip. So as you know, Kinder USA is a smaller organization, but we've had some very solid partners that we've worked with over the years to help provide mainly food and other forms of assistance to the most marginalized Palestinians. And so our partners are from Gaza, in Gaza, and since the beginning we've been able to continue to provide them with the financial resources from generous donors like your listeners to procure what's most necessary to help avoid starvation. And right now, just this week, we delivered 30,000 liters of clean drinking water to families in Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia in the north of Gaza. We've been in Khan Yunis, been in Rafah, distributing food. Food prices are exorbitant, so because we have funds donated, we're able to get food mainly in the form of produce that is local to Gaza, or whatever is sold in shops or in the marketplace of whatever people get from the intermittent border crossings that happen, and then we distribute those to those families in greatest need. Our partners are very well organized in terms of tracking who needs what and distributing it. It's not random, and we really are grateful to them. In the beginning, they lost some of their own staff members who were killed trying to flee the north of Gaza. our own staff member who lives in Gaza, has been displaced multiple times and is now living, you know, in a tent. So it's bad for the humanitarian workers as it is for everybody else. And on top of that, they still continue to tirelessly get out there to support their own community. And that kind of support you see from Palestinians for one another in Gaza is really, on the one hand, it's heartwarming, but on the other hand, it's gut-wrenching because they know that they only have themselves to rely on at this time.
You know, Layla, one of the things that Kinder USA is a true testament to, and really what we have tried to do on this show, and even before STNI with Dawn, and even before Dawn, is really talk about the situation in Palestine, because it didn't, despite what is often sometimes presented, it didn't start on October 7th, what we're seeing in terms of the violence against Palestinians, the human rights abuses against Palestinians, and the apartheid policies that we see. That said, can you talk about how long Kinder USA has been doing the work in Gaza? I mentioned it in the intro, but if you could just remind all of us how that work has changed since October 7th, and then the challenges that you've experienced over the last 8 months in providing humanitarian relief in Gaza. I know you're able to, but I imagine that you've experienced a lot of challenges along the way in doing that.
Yeah. Well, we started in 2002. At that time, Gaza was still under occupation, literally, physically, with settlers and soldiers inside the Gaza Strip in the area of Gush Katif and Netzarim settlements, primarily. The Israelis occupied a third of the Gaza Strip at that time, and when I visited that year, the beaches were off limits to all Gazans for security reasons. It's interesting now that the same beaches that were off limits then are where they are all forced to stay now, in Mawasi area in particular. And we've focused on emergency relief, but our sort of hallmark over the past few years was in supporting local farmers, in buying seeds, helping them cultivate their crops that we would then purchase from them, working with women's cooperatives to then distribute the produce, including live chickens, eggs, things that people need for their daily lives, not just, you know, canned meat coming from somewhere else, to the neediest families, as I mentioned, using a registry to be able to not duplicate work and so forth. And in addition, we, throughout the school year, we provided and we really initiated a hot breakfast program for students in preschool, kindergarten, and elementary school, starting with the UNRWA schools, and eventually UNRWA took over that project, as they should have. And so our focus has been on the schools that are not UNRWA schools. These are for Gazans who are indigenous to the area, not eligible for refugee aid. And especially pre-K and kindergarten. So through us and the local community, we've supported women heads of household whose husbands had either been killed or injured. So we helped develop and promote the local economy in a way that was dignified for families, and supporting children with nutritional needs very early in development, which, as we know, has a huge impact on their ability to succeed in school. So that's what we had been doing. And then, you know, this was just a big shock, because the first thing we had to think about was the safety of our team. And you can't ask them to distribute aid if they're going to be under bombardment and their lives threatened. But they are very resilient. And as I said, as soon as they felt that it was safe, they were able to get back out into the community to figure out what people needed. We were able to provide hot meals as well, but right now it's just food and water is all we're able to do. That we did have some in Egypt very early on with getting some trucks with supplies in, but as you know, that has really been curtailed, and now with the occupation of the actual border of Rafah, there's very little going in. We also partner very closely and coordinate with the consortium of humanitarian groups that are in Gaza, including the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and others, who meet regularly, including with our team, so that everyone has a more kind of organized way of distributing aid against what's not duplicated, and they do keep track of who is where and what areas are in greatest need, and update, you know, on-the-ground facts that often don't get reported about some of the more challenging circumstances, also how people are looting some of these humanitarian trucks out of desperation and the sense of lawlessness because they've destroyed, like I said, all of the civil infrastructure, including anything that could provide law and order. And the Palestinians are then just relying on themselves to try to provide that safety and protection, but it's chaotic. It's just chaos everywhere. And so what will happen in the future, we have no idea. But as we've been there for these last 20 years, we plan to continue to do our part to provide support.
Leila, you began to touch on it a bit, but I do wonder what are some of the things that you can tell us about the situation in Gaza that you feel that are not being told out in the mainstream media or even perhaps in alternative media like this? What are things that you wish were being reported? And also, while we are in Fund Drive, I know that there was a fundraiser for Kinder USA yesterday, and I wonder if you can just also let our listeners know where they can go to learn about how they can help Kinder USA in our last few minutes.
The fundraiser is next weekend. This coming Saturday, June 29th at All Saints Church.
Oh, fantastic.
So if any listeners are interested, it's through the Middle East Ministry, and they can go to our website, kinderusa.org, to find out more. Can also find out about how to give secure online donations. I was thinking about that question, Esty, and we talk a lot about the injuries, the disabling of the entire Palestinian population, this massive number of amputations of limbs that have to happen to children and adults alike. And we sort of stop there, and we know we all care so much about each individual who's been killed. There are groups called we are not numbers to tell us really about all these people who have been killed, the lives that they had, their hopes and dreams. And that's been very important to hear. What I have been thinking a lot about lately is the fact that 600,000 children, young people, have been without school for the last 9 months. And will they be able to go back to school in August or September? We've also had back-to-school projects to help provide funds to families so they could purchase uniforms and supplies, so they could afford to send their children to school. Think about what that means for this population, and I don't think we're talking about that enough. There are reports that talk about, quote, scholasticide, but then that almost feels like from a, 30,000-foot view, as opposed to what does that mean in the daily life of a Palestinian who was about to graduate high school or was finishing their exams for university and now can't get their degree. About 30,000 people were in university. We know all of the universities have been destroyed, not just damaged, but completely destroyed. This is a very intentional act against the people of Gaza, who put a very high premium on literacy and education. You have one of the highest literacy rates in the Arab world in Gaza, upwards of 97% to 98% for both men and women. And so this really hits people at an area that enables them to achieve a certain level of intellectual accomplishment, which they can't do. The world outside is not stepping in to help them like they have, say, for scholars and students in Ukraine or elsewhere. So we need to start talking about how we can support these students, what the effects are of not being in school. And then when you look at the number of children now who are literally orphaned, who are out on the street trying to, sell things to make money, that since many of their family members have been killed, who's looking after them? There's incidents of child abuse and neglect going on. We don't like talking about those things, but it's true. We sort of look to some of the images of the kids that we can say, look how resilient they are. But really, this is a terribly devastating situation. What is the impact going to be on them? for the coming years, not only their exposure to this massive trauma and violence, but also taking them out of the place that provided structure and hope and joy for them on a regular basis. I feel like that could be talked about. The other thing that I would mention is the status of Palestinians who have managed to flee. Some of my relatives, for example, were able to leave Gaza to go to Egypt. But what's happening to them there? They don't have residency permits. There are reports of people languishing in hospitals in Egypt who supposedly got out so they could get medical care, which they can't. If they're lucky, they might get moved to, say, the Gulf, Qatar, what have you, and perhaps get care there. But the majority of people are not being cared for, even despite the goodwill of the Egyptian people. If Egypt doesn't have the capacity to provide that care, who does? In every other refugee situation, whether it was Bosnia or Afghanistan, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, was mobilized immediately to start to provide services and assistance. But because UNRWA provides that service for Palestinians, and we know what kind of attack they came under because there is a desire to completely destroy UNRWA itself, then you have nothing left for these refugees that are now in Egypt. What kind of services are there? What organizations are there that are helping them, survive and meet their needs? They're alive, but that's all we can say. Are their children able to go to school in Egypt? Can they get medical care there? The cost of living is very high for many of these families. There's literally no assistance for them whatsoever, and thousands of Palestinians have left and are in Egypt now. So I don't see anyone really talking about that, exploring that, looking into it. And inside Gaza, I just, as an organization supporting children, we're thinking not only about their physical disability and trauma and deaths, but we also need to think about the massive psychological trauma and the terrible effect of the destruction of their school system.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we have been talking today about the ongoing crisis in Gaza, as well as the humanitarian crisis for even those Palestinians who managed to flee Gaza, as Dr. Leila El-Mariotti just laid out. And Dr. Leila El-Mariotti, who's been joining us for this segment, is currently the chair of Kinder USA, a humanitarian organization that's been providing assistance to Palestinian children and their families in Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon for over 20 years. Leila, if you could just one more time give us the website that people can go to learn more about Kinder USA and to donate. I know a lot of people want to give to support Palestinians during this time and don't know where to give, where they can ensure that their money is actually going to those on the ground in Gaza. And Kinder USA is one of those places that folks can trust to give to. So one more time, you can give us the website and the fundraiser that's happening next week.
Right. And before I do that, I just want to thank you both for your unwavering support on this issue and for having me on your program today and previously. It really is so meaningful and so appreciated. The website is kinderusa.org, kinderusa.org. Also, please follow us on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And share what you see with others so that can increase our profile through social media. The event is a fundraiser for Kinder USA next weekend on June 29th at the All Saints Church in Pasadena. Also a great friend and supporter, and you mentioned Reverend Myers, and we've really been partners with that community for quite a long time. One of our speakers will be Dr. Riyad Abdul-Karim, one of the founders of Kinder USA, as well as two other physicians who recently returned from a medical mission in Gaza. And so I think you can probably register, sign up through our social media, as well as our website. And I really hope to see everyone there. It will be from 3 to 5 p.m. So please spread the word. And thank you again so much for everything that you have done.
Thank you so much, Leila, for taking the time to be with us today. You know, it's heartbreaking to hear what people are going through and how difficult it is being made for them. This organization that has been providing care to kids and their families, not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank and Lebanon. You know, John Bustani was a very proud Lebanese American and, you know, was also a supporter. You know, we just don't hear about this kind of, we don't hear voices like that of Dr. Leila Al-Mariati on other radio stations, and it's why it's so important to keep KPFK and Middle East in focus on the air. I think in our last couple minutes, we have one more guest who can speak to the importance of KPFK and Middle East in focus. Are you with us? He needs no introduction. Are you with us, Alan Minsky?
It's great to hear your voice, and this is Alan Minsky, and I actually stepped aside from a national town hall to be here, folks, because I want to let you know, there cannot be any radio show in the country more important in this society at this moment than Middle East in Focus, okay? That's just, I think I would hold that up. I know it seems subjective, as an objective fact, and I would challenge anybody to puncture the theory. Look, these are truths that are spoken about on these airwaves when this show is on that need to be heard in our society. We can have no illusions that the catastrophes of Middle Eastern politics have been overdetermined by U.S. policy. Consequently, truths about the Middle East are not allowed into mainstream media. Anybody who reflects on this for a moment will know it to be true. But KPFK, in its undying and unwavering courage, has always had this show on, first by Don Pisani, handed over to the brilliant new host today. Esty, it is so great to be here with you. And it is essential, folks, that you realize the reason this can happen is because you out there are able to support the show at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. There is not any way that if this was a commercially funded station that this could be allowed. Okay, are there some businesses out there that would want to support a show? Yes, but you know what would happen then? They would be hit by boycotts because the coordinated forces of the establishment would turn against those businesses. So it takes this independent structure where you support us right now with your money at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, that allows us to bring onto the airwaves of Southern California and to distribute this podcast globally to bring truth to the people, one of the absolute constituencies who has to know these truths, needs to know these truths, which is the American polity, folks. So please support Middle Eastern Focus, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Esty Chandler, thank you. Thank you for all that you do.